Welcome to the Mirror Podcast. I'm Kathy Posey.
And I'm Ariana Yupi. Our mission is open, public, climate education. Clarity over hype, evidence over rhetoric.
Each episode, we speak with leaders in science and society about how climate information is interpreted and communicated under uncertainty.
Find us on social media or at mirror.org.
Today, we are joined by Dr. Klaus Richter, a physicist and president of the German Physical Society.
Dr. Richter recently co-authored a joint statement with the German Meteorological Society that drew global attention, warning that the Earth could warm by as much as 3 degrees Celsius by 2050 if current trends continue.
The statement and the Die Zeit article that followed sparked widespread debate about how fast the climate is changing and how to respond. Dr. Richter, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me to this interview.
We'll get started with the joint statement and the Die Zeit article. What made your societies decide to issue the warning now?
Yes, I mean, there's a certain tradition that the German Physical Society already had other warnings earlier. So back in 1971, we had the first press release, and already, I mean, this is now more than 50 years back. And even there, our colleagues from that time predicted or estimated roughly global warming of 2 degrees in this century. And that is remarkable because at that time, nobody was speaking about global warming. That hasn't started. And still it was rather, and given the sparse data there and no real computers, still they were able to make this rather plausible prediction. And then there was another statement in 1987. This was already the German Physical Society, in short DPG, Deutsche Physikalische Gesellschaft, together with the German Meteorological Society. That was the first statement and commonly. And the idea was now 2 years ago that to check this again, to whether the predictions from this last statement from 1987 are still valid and so on and so forth. They are. It turns out they are roughly the same. And this was the starting point of a group of about 15 scientists from both societies. And those include physicists, also people working on energy transformation, but of course, climate scientists and environmental scientists to think about having a new statement. And this took then about 18 months to come up with that. Yeah, so then you see the last statement was 1987. And we thought it's now again time indeed to make a public statement. You know, our German Physical Society has certain rules, and we of course physicists, but one basic aspect also of our bylaws is that we have a social responsibility. So our bylaw says indeed, as physicists, we have a lot of expertise, and this makes us responsible to inform society. And climate and global warming is the best example where one should take this responsibility. But of course, on a scientific level, one shouldn't exaggerate. One should be, of course, everything well underpinned by scientific knowledge. And this was the reason then to start together with the German Meteorological Society, because there, of course, many of the climate scientists are also in that society. And then also, the timing was it took about 18 months that this group of about 15 colleagues then filed this and worked out this statement. There were a lot of discussions about also sentences, how far one should go and how moderate one should be. But we also thought that the present time or last year was important because in the German politics, but also worldwide, I mean, the climate change issue was a bit put into the background, you know, also in the German policy, the same. And in the US, we know. So we thought sometimes you should be also anti-cyclic. You should come with a statement and to make clear, within what we can do, that there is an issue in the long run. And that's why we finally published this in September then.
Yeah, that makes sense. And also, I believe in the article there, you guys talked about how their recent temperatures and ocean data has shown signs of acceleration. And also, scientists felt like you guys felt you have a duty to update the public on what the ev evidence is now suggesting. So it's not just a prediction, it's a risk-based warning.
That's true. That's important also. That's always what we stress. It is we talk about risks. We don't talk about what is the most probable outcome. And yeah, so the background is a bit that there's on the one hand, of course, the scenarios of the International Panel of Climate Change, IPCC. Those are now on based on data from now 5, 6, 7 years ago. And with, of course, with scenarios far into the future. And we, of course, have used those. But on top, as you were saying, there are new data, of course, in the meantime. And those are data about ocean temperature, global warming, and many of the other aspects. We mentioned that there are more or more hints that global warming might accelerate. But we are a bit careful. There are hints. This is still a discussion on the scientific level because we don't know where this finally turns out. And so there's, on the whole, if we talk about risks, we should, on the one hand, think of different scenarios. And I go back a bit to the IPCC, that talking about predictions in the far future, say 2050 or later, is of course rather difficult. This is a people sometimes talk about deep uncertainty in this problem, because on the one hand, we have of course our natural sciences, and we know climate is a complex system, the whole Earth climate system. It's complex in itself, but in principle, it follows the rules of nature, and they are defined. So if these physicists know what will be a CO2 emission in the future, this can be computed in principle with a certain again with a certain margins. But we don't know the CO2 emissions because this depends on societies, and this makes it deeply difficult, so to say. So it's not just comp because we societies and nations don't follow laws of nature. We are recognizing this during the last years. And that means that's why the IPCC also doesn't talk about probability in their scenarios. They talk about different scenarios that might happen. Say one would be where all nations stick to the Paris Agreement, and this would be, the best, of course. Then there might be scenarios like going on as it is at the moment, or worse, more worse scenarios where again, oil, coal, and gas will take over. Again, but you cannot quantify this with a probability. So then within each scenarios, you can have now a range. And this brings me now to this risk assessment that you would argue, even with the intermediate scenario, there are of course hints like these hints towards an acceleration of the temperature rise, and also in view of the changes in the overall political conditions in the world. And just take the US. There are uncertainties such that we should keep in mind that it is rather plausible or possible to have a range, say, go to 2050. There might be a temperature range between, warming of 2 to 3 degrees. To make it again, to put a margin, the Paris Agreement would say one should reach 1.5 degrees or well below 2 degrees. If I talk to colleagues, people think that this won't be still achieved. You will have at least an overshoot effect. And this brings us close to 2 degrees, maybe. And then, given the situation I just explained, that you cannot really quantify, this opens up the range from 2 to 3. And this is within also the known IPC scenarios, so the best and the worst. So 3 degrees might be a worst case scenario. And that's also what we always would like to make clear. It is not a prediction that it will come. This might be a small probability, but we cannot exclude it. And that's why we would call it a risk. And I could, if you like, I could just add what we mean by a risk as scientists. A risk you can roughly think of that is the amount of damage multiplied by the probability that it will happen. And that means, I mean, not with respect to climate generally. I mean, this is kind of risk estimation. And now, this means that though we cannot really give a probability of that this climate, that temperature range rise will be 3 degrees, even if this probability is rather small, I mean, the damage would be huge. And that's why there is a finite risk. And that's why we mention this as physical societies. However, making clear this is not, it's by far not the most probable way. This may be rather a bit above 2 degrees or so, but there's this range.
Yes, that headline from the news article, 3 degrees by 2050, certainly did capture worldwide attention. And can you elaborate a little bit more about what that risk looks like, what that number represents? What does 3 degrees Celsius look like on the ground?
Yes, I mean 3 degrees is, of course, that is a globe average, would be an average global warming. And I think one should always make clear that 2 or 3 degrees sounds, I mean, not much. I mean, in Germany, people could think of, well, it's nice, it's a bit warmer then. But as we know, this is just an average. And it's kind of a number that quantifies also that fluctuations will be much stronger, so that you will have, of course, periods of high temperatures all over the world, which be longer. You might have, of course, heavy rain. So everything which has been, I mean, you have these extreme climate or weather events that are will grow if you have a higher average temperature. So the higher the temperature on average, the more energy is in the system. And that more energy, that means everything gets more kind of violent. So 3 degrees compared to 2 degrees or so means you have also distinguished between continents and sea. If we take Europe, for instance, the increase in temperature is way higher than the global increase. So in Germany, for instance, this year or over the last years, in Germany or Middle Europe, we have already 2.5 to 3 degrees increase. So it's higher than this. But to go back to that, to the 3 degrees would mean that, of course, there are more larger and larger regions in the world where you have really conditions where you cannot survive at least for longer time than without help. This is one aspect. And then, I mean, if you are taking with the European point of view, the climate zones would just move up in to that towards the northern sphere. So now, what is now North Africa at the moment? This climate zone would move up a bit to the south of Spain. So the Sahara situation would be rather than in the south of Spain. And Germany or would have, might have a climate then of Italy or so. And again, the danger is then that such climate changes, one might adapt. I mean, also human people can adapt to many of those changes, but one needs time. And say 25 years from now is not much time to adapt on the whole as a society. So that is why, I mean, again, it's an extreme scenario. It is a certain risk to have this. But if it happens, this is our examples of what what we can expect then.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for clarifying how 3 degrees average temperature does not mean we all enjoy 3 degrees warmer weather on a day-to-day basis. It's so much more volatile than that. And also for clarifying that this message is about the boundaries of possibility, not necessarily inevitability, but risk we may still be able to shape.
Yeah, it's kind of worst case scenario with 2050. However, sometimes I would like to, I mean, people are then, as you were saying, this are worried. We talk here about a worst case, but we might think 30 years more into the future, say 2080. And then scenarios of the IPCC, of course, depending again on the scenario. And we don't know what happens during the next 50 years. Maybe the world changes and a more optimistic scenario again takes place. But again, then the more pessimistic scenarios are then more probable. So this means that if we talk now about 2050, about my children or so, then 30 years later, it's the grandchildren that will face these temperatures. Of course, one would have more time to adapt, but again, it is. It will cause many problems. So this one should keep in mind if people get afraid that this happens at that might happen 2050. If we don't change things in 2080 or so, this could be more probable. But one should be careful again. I mean, as I was saying, we talk about this deep uncertainty in doing any predictions from now. Who knows what is in 50 years? We cannot do true predictions. We have a broad range of possibilities, which on the other hand doesn't mean that science, this should not imply that science and scientists cannot predict things. You know, we have a clear, I mean, there the scenarios, they are well defined. We have clear, also natural sciences are strong in predicting things, but we are also honest. There are certain horizons and time horizons where we can say this is a time horizon where that's the front of science, maybe in predicting things from in 10 or 20 years on to make better predictions. And that's just where science happens, where we have different articles, where one has to acquire knowledge in the scientific community to be sure. That's always the balance between making clear we have our, also as physicists, we have the clear law of physics exists. They will prevail. That's a good thing. I mean, we often make the point we should not intermix laws and meanings. I mean, at least in Germany, maybe in the other, also in the US, and so people like to have meanings on. So they think how it could be. But we often tell them, or I would tell them, they are the law, the fundamental laws of physics and of nature. And they don't care about meanings of people. And they exist. You cannot change them. It's not a law like in law school where you can, or a state could change its law. I mean, nature has dictated the law. And what's good? I mean, this is really good. It is, they are stable. They exist and will exist also in the future. And this is important because this makes things reliable. We know that they also the laws of nature, the laws of thermodynamics, of quantum science, and all that will be the same in 100 years from now. And this helps also us to make reliable predictions on the in general. So this is a bit more about climate communication also. So we are on safe ground on the one hand. But of course, scientists should be also always honest and transparent on how far they can go, what is really already kind of common sense, what is shown or proven, and what is still maybe speculation or just in this discussion among the communities.
Yes, thank you. I definitely the scientific communication is such an important part, and I think it's great that scientists can also, admit that there is uncertainty.
And
And
it's
then,
important, sorry. It's
okay, go
important
ahead.
also, I mean, to for the sometimes uncertainty is taken as I mean, by say people who are not in favor of science use uncertainty then as a tool against science.
Yeah, I've seen that on the
So
internet a
that's why
lot.
it's important to make clear. I mean, scientists are certain about many things, and this is easy to, I mean, take thermodynamics or quantum physics. I mean, quantum physics is an example. I mean, the whole world relies on quantum science. We just talk here now. Without quantum physics, our interview wouldn't be possible. We wouldn't have cell phones, we wouldn't have TV, we wouldn't have any communication without quantum physics. And this has been now 100 years ago, this started. And everybody is using this, and this is the best example where indeed science and natural and also basic science turned into something useful that works. I mean, if science would be wrong, then we couldn't talk. This wouldn't have been. So there's the best example, for instance, or thermodynamics. Also, thermodynamics is how a power plant is working, be it a coke or a coal plant, or also atomic power plant, or solar energy. Everything this is also based on science, on physics, and we know it is working. And I think everybody would agree that those work. So the same physical theory, namely thermodynamics and quantum physics, is also used to understand climate change. You see, the basis is the same, and that's why one should make clear that also climate change can be predicted as and is on safe ground. So we have one global theory with different aspects then. And you cannot distinguish and argue climate change is not on the solid ground, but say using thermodynamics for power plants. It's the same.
Yes, and historically, climate scientists have been predicting the temperatures and situations that we're facing now for many, many years, for more than 50 years. They've been sounding the alarm, and quite rightly so.
Right, and in retrospective, we see that they were right. I mean,
Yes.
as we started this interview, yeah, in this 1971, this first press release of the German Physical Society and others also, they got the right estimate, namely about 2 degrees warming by in the middle of this century, so in 2040, maybe 50. This shows in
Yes,
retrospective how
thank you.
strong science is. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I did have a question going back to the article. When you and your colleagues reviewed the data, what indicators stood out the most?
There, I mean, on the one hand, there's of course there, as I was saying, the IPCC report, which is still, of course, I mean, also having these scenarios. This is important, kind of as a framework, also setting the boundaries, so to say. And then there, new data. One is, and I should say maybe at this stage that. I myself, doing quantum science. I work on complex quantum systems, but I'm not a climate scientist. So I can't discuss now all the details. This is simply beyond my expertise. And what came out from from the discussion and from my expert colleagues is there are data about ocean temperatures that is rather high, which might hint to more, could be one aspect of acceleration of global warming. Also, ocean, as understood, ocean convection is one aspect. Then there are other aspects, but again, this is now under discussion, I should say. Those are could be hints. This is under discussion that the albedo is less than, or might be less. And what is unclear also, but again, there are hints to that, there could be kind of non-linear effects. You know that tipping point, there's a discussion about tipping points, all that. And then it is, I should say, those are hints. This might give a direction towards more a stronger global warming, but it's unclear to so far. And this includes our risk assessment, if you wish. And there are further aspects, I think, so that I think that air pollution is reduced on the whole, and the reduction of sulfides, I think, in the air increases the transparency. So increases in principle warming. Though I'm not the expert to I'm not sure whether one can quantify this. You know, so I mentioned a few qualitative effects that hint towards a certain acceleration, but it's difficult to quantify them. So what does it mean, or each of those effects in terms of a temperature raise at the end? But this is including this so this is one aspect. The second aspect is again a question about also definition. If we talk, if we take the temperature data, global warming during the last years, the last 3 years were the hottest ever measured, I think. But of course, these can be fluctuations. You know, there are strong fluctuations over the years. And it is unclear whether this is a fluctuation or could be the precursor of a trend. And this is again a discussion in the, I think, in the community of climate scientists. I mean, one should be really careful there because there are always fluctuations. It is also, I mean, the question, how do you define now acceleration of warming? You know, acceleration means you have a certain trend. So if I have kind of time in this direction and temperature, if it is linear, it wouldn't be accelerated. So you will have a curve kind of. But now the question is, what is how do you define acceleration? And there are well-defined measures also for the IPCC. Those are of over a long period of time, I think 10 or 20 years. That means only, I mean, reliably, maybe in 10 years or so, or after a certain number of years, you can then in retrospective tell has there been acceleration or not. And but this means, and now comes our kind of the situation of our physical society here. We would like to provide an assessment. Of course, we could wait for 10 years and then we see, okay, there was an acceleration or not, but then it's a bit too late. So this is, I mean, kind of a, of course, we are, should be always on safe. We should say what are the data. And that's what I try to make clear here, that again, whether there is an acceleration at the end or not, we will see. But there are certain hints that we should take seriously. But as understood from the discussion also with experts, also from different communities in climate research, this is really under debate. This is unclear.
Another interesting thing that I saw in the article was the there's a faster half degree steps over the recent decades, and it's just like crazy to think like the half degree warming steps are arriving much faster than historical experience prepared for us. So I just thought that point in the article was very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, this is, of course, this is now in the past. This is easy to check. And I mean, the climate models also, of course, they take into account that. I mean, you know, they are calibrated with respect to the past. I mean, this shows that in the past, there has been an acceleration. I mean, what you're saying, that the half degree steps get shorter, means warming is getting faster. But the question is, does it go on? Or maybe it kind of saturates somehow on a certain slope. And this is what we don't know. I also should mention that I think there was in the early 2000s a longer period where it looked like that it kind of saturates and is not accelerating any longer. And people at that time were not sure what happened. But those are also transient periods and shows again that fluctuations on different time scales might play a role on a scale of 2, 3 years. Or even on 5 or 8 years. And now, from my non-expert point of view, if we talk about complex systems, so beyond climate, that's where it's part of my expertise. Complex systems mean they are not fully erratic, they are not chaotic. Complex mean always in a general context, you cannot simply disentangle the system into simple parts and then understand the simple parts. No, they are multifaceted. You have many layers, all of them are intertwined. And this gives typically a dynamics that is also complex in the sense that sometimes everything is regular. You have kind of transient regions or periods where everything is stable. And then you might, from time to time, you have disruptive behavior. And this is typical of a complex system. So you cannot really predict what happens. So earthquakes is a good example. So you know earthquakes, physics can ex do statistics. So there's a well-known law that will tell you on a statistical level how many earthquakes of a certain strength will happen. This is well known, but you can usually not predict far into the future when this will happen. And this is also kind of a complex system. Nothing happens for some time, and suddenly you have smaller or bigger disruptive events. And in this sense, also temperature change, of course, is not just simple and just a curve that you can easily follow. And maybe this is a bit for the embedding that we do not know how it will behave in the future. And there's another aspect which is called nonlinear. This is also a non-equilibrium. So you are not in a stable mood where nothing changes. Non-equilibrium means we have temperature, we have energy, things are moving.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Dr. Richter, in the article, you mentioned temperatures in Germany possibly reaching 50 degrees Celsius during future summers. Is that based on mostly new modeling or analogy with past extremes?
This is based on the fact that extreme weather events will get more extreme in a warming world. That means, on average, as I was mentioning earlier, so the average temperature in Germany or in Europe, Middle Europe, is increasing more than the global average temperature. So at the moment, we have already roughly d 3 degrees in Germany on average above the, as a temperature increase. Now, in a warmer world, then we might have maybe 5 or 6 degrees more on average in Germany. And then these 50 degrees was meant as if you have then extreme events. I mean, a hot summer or hot July with 1 week, this can reach then 50 degrees. So it's not meant as that in summer in Germany or in Europe, there will be always 50 degrees, not at all. But what is now 40 degrees or 42 in Spain could then be much higher. So, say, extreme weather is even more extreme then, and that means that you might have reached these temperatures.
Thank you. Yes, I think that is key, that it small increases in global average temperature lead to extreme weather events, heat waves, droughts, etc., that go far beyond what a couple degree difference would make in one location.
Right, is then yeah. So it will be in a certain location and for a certain time, a week or so. Yeah.
I did have a question about the adaptation portion. Your society's also raised adaptation, even suggesting eventual retreat from low-lying coastlines. Why was it important to include that?
Yeah, that's. Of course, we got many, many questions on that, particularly from North Germany, from the
Yeah.
coastline, from newspapers there. Yeah, there are two things. I mean, we put on purpose the word discussed. So we say something like one should discuss this. We didn't say one has to do it. This is one aspect. The other is that one should make clear this is a completely different time scale. So the ocean level might or will raise or rise is on a, there we talk about scales of 100 years or so. At the moment, if you go back, this is on the millimeter level. But again, there are, say, forecasts that this is kind of an exponential or close to an exponential law. Again, in case that global warming will go on or will accelerate. And this means, and then there, with certain uncertainties, of course, estimates that in 100 years from now, so by around 2100 or 2120 or so, the could be about 1 meter or 80 centimeter. And this means that one should, of course, this is far away now still, but one should think about this early enough, because you cannot simply within 10, 20 years act then. You know, this means you should, these things will move on slowly, but you should keep this in mind. We know, of course, that this is it's so far away that from the psychological point of view, it's difficult to, to make any actions there. We see, I mean, this is the same psychological problem with global warming. I mean, if we talk about 2050, it's far away still. 2100 is even further away, but expert colleagues told me that once the ocean level is rising, you cannot, I mean, it has a move, kind of an inertia. You cannot stop it anymore. It will rise. And that's why we thought we should put it on the agenda, because we are scientists, we think in terms of long time scales. And should mention this at least.
Yeah, definitely. It's very important to discuss adaptation early so people don't panic and they're prepared.
And that leads me to a question. It sounds like your group of scientists feel are doing something a little different to help society prepare for what lies ahead. And what would be your advice for scientific communities in how they can, what they should do differently to help each different location and their societies prepare for some of these possibilities ahead?
Could you give an example? Do you mean different if now so, scientific societies or
Well, like
different?
groups. Yeah, groups like your meteorological society and physical society coming together to put out this warning and to discuss something as controversial as moving away from coastlines in the future. It just made me think that's a different tactic than what people tend to use. And I just wondered if you have advice of how you think scientists should communicate with the society at large to prepare for some of these eventualities.
Yeah, I think so. What is it's thanks for asking. So our statement has two aspects. One is the aspect that we have mainly discussed now during last 30 minutes or so, the aspect of risk and cold warming, a warning. So our statement has two aspects. One is the aspect of mentioning risks, and the other aspect has to be also made clear, and we had 10 items there to make clear we should be still optimistic. So it is not, we should not just have fear and think we cannot do anything. No, we can do a lot. We can, as individuals, as societies, as communities, and we should take these opportunities. That is important aspect I always put forward. So think optimistically and start do something. And this is important to make this clear. On the other hand, also, and there we see kind of a red line for us, we make clear from the from our point of view, based on our expertise, what is the status and what in general should could be done. In this sense, it is a certain political statement. However, and that was important for me also as a president to make clear, we don't make clear, specific recommendations. No, we don't say I don't know. Don't use coal and gas and oil any longer. Drive electrical cars. I mean, those are specific aspects. A society should decide about this, and the politicians together with the society. So that's why our 10 suggestions that came out of this analysis are rather broad and general. Because now, I mean, also the question about energy transformation. Energy transformation is extremely important to meet and to work against climate change. So we need to have a change from fossil to renewable energies without any question. We mentioned this. How to do this again is not only a question of physics. Of course, physics and engineering can tell the society what is possible. But now what enters is their economics, for instance. And so, because what is the cost for which type of energy? And that's why we have our statement. The press release was together with other scientific communities and societies. So we had a press release, and that's my deep wish and opinion. Different scientific societies and communities should work together here. So there's physics, but then there's economy, which is so important, also on the scientific level. They can show paths how to indeed implement renewable energy, for instance. And then there's sociology. Again, this is extremely important because this means, how can you convince a society to change, but in a positive way? I mean, that you don't feel that the society shouldn't feel pressure in a direction. This wouldn't work. But so how to deal with a society to get a change? So you see there, in terms of global warming, physics did a lot and things are clear from that side. Others, I think other disciplines are asked here. Also, what is called climate communication, what we in Germany call climate psychology. So, what's the right way to talk to people, to communicate in the right way, really to get things changed? And there, this is an interesting aspect that the problem of global warming and this issue can be only came addressed by all different disciplines in science. I don't know in any other example where this is the case. You know, you can talk about quantum physics and so on. This is mainly physics. And then there's, of course, chemistry. But global warming is needs all different disciplines, also philosophy in a certain sense. And of course, the all social sciences. And that's why I had a year ago, I had a symposium in Berlin where I invited, was mainly people from Germany. I think 10 different disciplines of people working in the context of climate research and climate warming, a global warming, to bring them together and to think of common solutions. But
Yes,
again,
thank
as
you,
coming back
Aaron.
to your question, so we think we have a responsibility. The statement was also addressed indeed to the politicians, so to all members of the Bundestag, that is the parliament, to all ministers. So it was a clear statement towards politics, but on the ground of science, still on the safe ground.
Yes, it's indeed a complex problem that's going to take all aspects of society to come together to address it. Thank you.
We just have a few last closing questions. So when you think about the next decade, what gives you the most concern and what gives you the most hope?
Let's start with the most concern, again, in the context of climate and global warming, is that if you look back 5 or 10 years ago, I think there was on the overall political scene, and the political conditions were simply, I mean, on the worldwide were different. You know, that was in the US different, that was also, but on the whole, I mean, there was not the Ukraine war in Europe. And 10 years ago, there was also still, I think, a commitment by many nations really to clearly and together work against climate change. And this has changed for many reasons. I mean, we can go into the details, but world is simply more as yeah. The individual nations get more power. UN is losing power, but this is not my personal opinion. I mean, that's not from a DPG point of view. So this is a bit where I think we all feel that things get a bit more volatile. You know, the every day's news. On the other hand, now with respect to, again, global warming, what I think is really, which makes me optimistic, that for the renewable energies get less and less expensive. So they, and we can take China as an example. I mean, we know China has still is using a lot of fossil energy, but put a lot of money into renewables. So I think photovoltaics in China during last half year, the amount of installed energy or is this in the last half year is the same as Germany on the whole has installed during the last 20 years or so. And this shows that since your renewables get less and less expensive, at the end it's the price which this is great. And you could also, I mean, if you look into, I mean, in the estimations of the International Energy Agency, you see how wind energy and how atomic energy will change or will what are the forecasts for the next 10 years. And then you see also solar energy and photovoltaics. And photovoltaics goes just up and is 10 times faster than nuclear energy that is expected to be now by increase. I mean, at the moment, so with respect to electrical energy, we have, it's interesting, in 2025, worldwide nuclear energy, photovoltaics and wind energy had the same amount. And the forecast for in 10 years will be that photovoltaics will be far away off the others. And that's good. I mean, that's that it is really that renewables will get really, or vice versa, fossil energy will get more and more expensive compared to renewables. And that's perfect.
Yeah, definitely agree, because I've seen how China has been leading the way with solar power, and they've been showing us that it is possible
Yeah, and I
and
mean,
affordable.
right. And usually China, I think they are just pragmatic, you know. And this shows that this works. Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. And finally, Dr. Richter, what can ordinary citizens do today? What kind of action can they take? How do they stay informed and constructive in the face of complex climate risks?
Well, I think it depends on each person. I think one should try in each person's sphere to do something. You know, say for me or for in my sphere here would be the German Physical Society, which is rather huge at the moment, 50,000 people. That's why I also, as a president, have been using this in order to put forward also these statements. But there are many different communities. I mean, say we take a university or say university students. So there's, of course, I guess also in the US, or at least in Germany, each university has now, say, an initiative of on climate, on environmental research, or sustainability activities. So students could just engage there. And I think this is on each scale, in each sphere. You can just, yeah, I think, show optimism. Do things and try to thereby, yeah, also to influence your direct neighborhood. And this is, yeah, on different scales. So one should not think one cannot do anything. I think this is clear.
Thank you. I do like that. I do think that agency offers us hope and optimism.
Yeah, and
Thank you.
as you do it, I mean, you with a podcast and with me here. This is another
Yes.
environment, another sphere where you have your the influence.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Richter, thank you for joining us and for helping us unpack both the science and the meaning behind these new signals.
Yeah, thank you too for the interview.
Listeners, thank you for being with us. You can find future episodes and updates at MIR.org.
We'll be back soon with more voices from science and society.
See you next time.